church. What a spiritual center this is. It's just amazing. I want to be brief today because I am a New Englander and the Patriots are about to win the Super Bowl this evening. I don't care what anybody else has to say about it. We're about to win. But I don't want to talk to you about that game. I do want to talk to you about a game that I took in last Saturday. You're not mad at me, are you? Don't be mad at me. As some of you know, my oldest grandson, Sabir, was diagnosed with cancer when he had just turned 4 years old. I brought that information to Unity of New York. Many of you held him in prayer, wrote wonderful letters, and just gave support to him, especially during that first year. It was rhabdomyosarcoma, and the prognosis was not a good prognosis. And I remember the day that we found out. He had just not been able to urinate for 4 days, and my daughter took him to the hospital, and they rushed him to a bigger hospital and did a bunch of tests on him. So, of course, we were all hopeful that it was just some minor thing going on with his bladder or whatever. And when we were in the hospital, that hope that we had was dashed in a moment because suddenly a group of 8 oncologists walked in and we could see their badges and see that they were oncologists. So we knew right away that we were dealing with cancer with my daughter's 4-year-old son and my 4-year-old grandson. And I just want you to know that he had just turned 4 at that time, and in the middle of April, he will be 10. I want to use him as my inspiration. At 4 years old, when people were surrounding him with all good intentions and saying to him, I know you're going to make it through. I know you're going to make it through. I know you're going to survive. I know you're going to be okay. One day he said, I don't want to just be okay. I don't want to just survive. I want to be super great. And what I want to tell you is that boy is super great. He is an athlete unlike, he's one of those athletes that just blow your mind. Some basketball and soccer players from UMass, and he's started working with him when he was about 8 years old because they saw the talent in him. I confess that he's been playing basketball and soccer and a couple of other sports for 3 years now, and I went to my very first one of his basketball games on Saturday before last. I was in the presence of a superstar. Very soon after the game started, they were ahead by over 12 points, and then soon they were ahead by 15 points. And out of the 15 points, my grandson had 12 of those points. He handles that ball, he handles his dribbling, he handles his shooting like he is a grown man. It's just where he is at home. I'm yet to see him in a soccer match, but my daughter says next Saturday when I do see him, I'm going to be just as blown away. I want to tell you about our experience of being at his game. They were, as I said, far ahead, and my grandson was, as I've said, the principal point maker on the team. And so what that allowed for us was it allowed for me and my daughter and Timothy and his daughter and other people who were in the stands supporting his team, it allowed us to have a lot of time where we were just catching up with one another, we were sharing what was new in our lives, and we were kind of laughing and chatting, and periodically we would observe the game and notice that, yes, we're still quite far ahead, and we would notice, oh, he's awesome. And then we would just start talking, and I noticed that this was happening in the entire bleacher section for my grandson's team, that we were being casual and we were paying half attention to the game. Well, at some point in the third quarter, all of a sudden, our players stopped doing as well as they had been, and the other team started playing better than they had been. And within a pretty short order in that third quarter, they had actually, we had lost a 12-point lead and a 15-point lead at one point, and now all we have is a 6-point lead. What I noticed immediately, we all stopped chatting, we all stopped catching up with one another, and suddenly our eyes were riveted to the basketball court. And we were yelling and screaming about for everybody on the team, come on now, play, get that ball, block, block, block. We were just every, there was so much aliveness. And on the other bleachers, on the other team that was approaching taking over, they were fully alive as well. There was no one in that auditorium that wasn't paying rapt attention and giving their all in support, rooting for their team. At one point, yay God, they actually tied us. When they tied us, the level of excitement, the level of energy, the level of support, the level of applause, the level of us rooting them on, it grew dramatically from an already dramatic interest in our winning. At another point, they actually got 2 points ahead. The whole gymnasium was going crazy, and all of us were giving our all behind our team winning. We did retake the lead, and we did win that game by a pretty short amount of points. I think it was something like we won by 4 or 6 points after having been ahead by 15 points earlier on in that game. The one thing that we were screaming out to the team and to one another during those moments where they approached catching up, caught up, we were saying, now we've got ourselves a game. And we were fully involved in that game. Why? Because there was a threat of losing that game. When there appeared to be no threat of losing the game, we were so casual, paying half attention to it. Just chatting, carrying on, catching up, laughing. It took a threat to our winning that grabbed the fullness of our attention and the fullness of our willingness to each of us as just observers to give everything we had in support of us winning our game. As I was walking out of the auditorium, I applied what I had just witnessed to what I have been witnessing in the political arena of the United States of America. And I said to myself, President Trump is in office. He was voted in. Instead of saying, oh my God, what has happened? Oh my God, what is he going to rip off? What is he going to undo? What danger is he going to put us in? I said for the first time as I walked out of the auditorium, now we've got ourselves a game. No longer. Now we've got ourselves a game. It's time to lean in. It's time to support the team you want to win. It's time to give it your full attention, Carlos Swain, is what I heard. You've been sitting on the sideline catching up with your daughter and other people for 8 years. 8 years sitting on the sideline, paying some attention, but not a whole lot. Because in your mind, Carlos Swain, we were leading by enough points that I could be casual. I think that we are living in one of the most exciting periods in the history, her story, your story, my story of the United States of America. I have preached here before that we have an opportunity always in any moment regarding anything to transform what upsets us into what excites us. I have been so excited, not since the 1960s have I witnessed so many people coming together. I love watching the people excited and in the game and rooting one another on. seeing people from different societies, different life circumstances, different social moves and spots in the nation coming together. I've seen women marching. I've seen people doing sit-ins. I've seen people going to support the Native Americans on the reservation to stop the pipeline. I have seen so much excitement of people leaning in and getting involved in the game. And I had not seen it at that level before these last number of months. I see people taking what upset them and turning it into what excites them. Some of the women who I know who were getting ready to go to the March on Washington, they were so excited. They were excited shopping for the sneakers that were going to be comfortable enough to allow them to do the walking that they could, and getting the right jackets for the different climate and the different weather that would be happening in Washington, D.C., and the different people that they were on the phone recruiting other people. It just got so exciting, and I kept repeating over and over all this week, now we've got ourselves a game. And what is the point of the game? What is the point of what's going on in the nation right now? Brothers and sisters, it's my talk title. It's a call to rise. And people are rising. And it is exciting. And we have only just begun. And check this out. The other team, they are leaning in as well. You know, at my grandson's game, one thing I got really clearly, the other team isn't bad. We're not better than the other team in any way. This is just our team. This is the one we resonate with. It's the one we feel connected to. And so I wanted us to win, not because they were bad, not because they were undeserving, not because they didn't have as much talent, not because they didn't have my grandson on their team. They were just another team that we were playing, which inspired me to remember that. That I'm for my team, but it doesn't mean the other team is a bad team. It doesn't mean they are undeserving. What I've been looking at in my own life over the last couple of months is, actually I've been looking at this in my life since August 16th, because some of you know that August 16th I went into the hospital for a little procedure and I ended up like going into cardiac arrest and flatlining. And I went to a place of light and I came back. I'm still integrating, and I'm still like finding my home again just in this incarnation right here. But I came back with some decisions that I had made. One of my decisions was I was going to stop like half-stepping in any of the departments of my life where I have been half-stepping. And I'm going to be very serious about what I do. I'm going to be very serious, and I'm going to disconnect from other people who are not serious. And I'm going to lean into people who are serious. I have actually said goodbye to a half dozen friendships since August 16th because I realized they hadn't been working for a half dozen years. But I was just stuck in them. I removed myself. I removed myself from several groups that I was involved in because upon reflection of the group, I realized they were groups where the people were coming like the man who crawled on his cot to the pool where the angels would stir up the water and anyone could be healed. And for 38 years, he dragged himself there to be healed and was never healed. And when he was approached by Jesus, Jesus asked the question, "Wilt thou be made whole?" And the guy thought it was the silliest question anybody could ever ask him. I am lame, I am on a cot, I am here by a pool. On the day that the angels will trouble the water and the first one in can be healed. And Jesus asked again, "Wilt thou be made whole?" And he came up with all of his excuses. "I would love to be whole, but nobody will help me. I would love to be hole, but no one will put me in the water. Everybody's trying to get in the water for themselves, for their own little healing needs, and no one cares about me. Woe is me, was what he said to Jesus. And Jesus just squatted down and said, I don't care about your story, brother. Everybody's got a story. I'm asking you a simple question. Give me a simple answer. Wilt thou be made whole? And finally, the guy went. After letting go all of his alibis and all of his excuses and thinking it was someone else's responsibility, he looked into the eyes of Yeshua and he said, this guy actually thinks that I can be whole simply by speaking the word. And he did speak the word, yes, I would be whole. I think upon that point, he reached out his arms expecting that now Jesus will pick me up and put me in the water and I'll get there first. But Jesus did no such thing. To him, the water was not even a part of the equation. The only part, the only significant part of the equation was to get this man to get to a point of willingness to let go of all excuses, all alibis, and to discontinue playing the blame game and to just simply come to a place where he really, fully, completely, with all of his heart, soul, mind, and strength, wanted to be whole more than he wanted the story of his pain. Many of us cannot be free because we are unwilling to let go of the story of our pain. What Jesus said to that rascal that day after he said, yes, I'll be whole, was, get up. You know, in that story, the man was physically lame. And sometimes I have forgotten to remind the people that that's not what I'm talking about. There are people who are in wheelchairs who are standing up and running faster than many of us who are on two legs going to and fro wherever we desire. I'm talking about a stand up, a rising up inside of us. All Jesus said to him was, rise, take up your bed, and walk. And the rascal did it. He got up. He took up his bed, held it over his head, and he walked through the village and back home into his own neighborhood. I thought about, why was it that Jesus asked him to take up his bed? Why not just get up? I think that he had him take up his bed so that people could see what he had made it through. That bed was the I once was lost, and now I'm found. I once was blind, and now I see. I once was dead, and now I live again. He gave him a call to rise, and the call was answered. I knew a little colored boy in Springfield, Illinois. And when he was 7 years old, he was molested by someone in his church community. And instantly his life was put in terror. And that one person was a part of a small group of people who were preying on young colored boys in his particular world. And so soon that one person became two more, and then another and another, until they counted seven people molesting this little boy. He was told that if he ever told his parents that the only option they would have would be to eliminate them, and either I will kill your father or he will kill me, either way, he's either dead or he is in prison. That little boy at 7 years old started peeing the bed almost every night, getting scolded about it almost every morning, getting threatened by his parents that we will hang your sheets out of your bedroom window and let all of your little friends see that you pee the bed. That little kid was me. And I can't tell you how many times I went to bed going, if I live through this, I'm going to rise. I'm going to be a voice for God, a voice for love, a voice for joining, and I will take up my little pea-stained bed, and I will walk, and I will be a living demonstration of I once was lost, and now I'm found. I once was blind, and now I see. I was dead. I live again. There's a scripture that says, awake those of you who sleep, and arise from the dead. And the Christ mind within you will enlighten you. Awake those of you who sleep, and arise from the dead. What does the dead mean? It doesn't mean physically dead. For some of us, it means the death of our hopes and dreams. For others, it means the death of our joy. For some of us, it means the death of our feeling secure and safe in the world. My daddy used to say, everybody walking around inhaling and exhaling is not alive. The walking dead are among you. Don't be one of them. And if you find upon self-examination that you already are one of the walking dead, don't put a period where God has placed a comma. You still have an opportunity to awake from your sleep, from the dream of separation from your good, the dream of division, the dream of my team is the righteous team, and that team is not righteous. Everything is an opportunity to rise. I spoke before I should have to my daughter about a year and a half or 2 years after my grandson's diagnosis. I spoke at a Thanksgiving meal. I said, I want to thank God for the opportunity that our family has received by Sabir having been diagnosed with cancer. I said, it is a call for us all to get clearer about what is important while we're alive. It is a call for us all to lean into more love. My daughter told me after the gratitude prayer that I gave, Dad, that was just way too early for anyone to be telling me that one day we're going to see this as a blessing. She doesn't feel that way now, but I really got that it is too early. Sometimes we don't need to come at people with our absolute new thought truth while they are in pain. Some of you know, I told you, I literally felt like choking. So many Unity ministers 25 or 28 years ago when my partner died and all the Unity ministers, because we did concerts at all the Unity churches all over the United States and through Canada and some in the islands, and I got all these calls as soon as they found out Johnny was dead. Nothing is lost in spirit. Just keep on keeping on. I said, if I could reach through this phone and snatch you by your neck right now, I would. And I told you there were only actually two ministers that I felt honored by. And one of them was Paul Tenaglia. And one of them was a minister friend of mine at that time, Richard Levy, who was the minister of Unity in San Luis Obispo. They met me with both bubbles. They met me with, I know that we all know that nothing is lost in spirit, but brother, let us also know that it hurts when we lose a loved one and that we can get scared when we've received a diagnosis or information from a lawyer or a landlord. Both things need to be honored. The human experience should not be bypassed to go into spirit. In fact, it cannot. And anyone who seems to be in that space is suspect. Hurt hurts. Fear makes you afraid. Confusion is confusing, and disappointments are disappointing. We can know all that and honor all that, and at the same time also honor, greater is the power within me than anything I will ever encounter in this world. That's what your song was about, sister. I was so grateful when I got in here and saw the song that you were rehearsing before our service right now, because I got that says it all. We will be visited by heartache and heartbreak. We will feel completely alone sometime. But we will always be able to have that little bubble of our human experience contained within a greater bubble of our spiritual reality. That once again, nothing shall ever be able to separate you from the love of God. If a little colored boy born in 1951 in Springfield, Illinois, with no one to tell about the hell he was experiencing at the hands of spiritual church people who were molesting him, if he could get out of his pee-stained bed and go into the bathroom and look into the mirror and say, "I'm going to rise," so can you. If a four-year-old diagnosed with cancer and going through the pain, it was a painful experience that he was experiencing. If a four-year-old could hear adults saying, "You're going to get through this. You're going to survive. You're going to be okay." And he looks at them and goes, "I don't want to just get through this. I don't want to survive. I don't want to just be okay. I want to be super." And prove it. He proves it. He proves it. I don't know if the words will ever come out of my daughter's mouth that this was a blessing in disguise. And whether she likes it or not, it does come out of his granddaddy's mouth on platforms, in churches and spiritual arenas, wherever he goes. Perhaps there's something going on in your life right now that doesn't look like a blessing. Perhaps there's something going on in your personal world or in your world at large, the world of your politics, the world of your society, the world of your relationships, the world of your finances. Perhaps there is something going on that you have been asking the question, "Why is this visiting me? Why is this happening to me? What is the purpose of this appearance of dis-ease?" Whether it's a dis-ease in a physical way, a mental way, an emotional way, a spiritual way, a financial way, what is the purpose? It's my talk title. It's a call to rise. Child, if we didn't need something to kick us in the butt sometime, to nudge us to do a little more and be a little more, we would be on the sidelines, catching up with people, only paying half attention to what's going on the court. These times that we're living in, they are not upsetting to me at all. I am keeping my eye on the prize. What don't kill me has always made me strong. These are exciting times. Times to rise into your calling, the fullness of your calling. Let advocates advocate. Let letter writers write letters. Let marchers write marchers. Let them march. Let boycotters boycott. Let prayers pray. Let blessers bless. But let all of us recognize not only our responsibility in managing our own minds, but the joy that comes when we do. One thing I'm doing is I'm stretching my own self-interest group. I realized I heard a group of people saying, "Well, he'll never do nothing for us because we're not in his special interest group." And once I heard that, I went into meditation. I said, Carlos, are you concerned only about your self-interest group? I mean, take a good look, bro. Be objective. Because whenever you want to look at somebody else, there's three fingers pointing back at you, telling you you need to self-examine, homeboy. And I went, oh my God, I do have my own little self-interest groups. Even though I'm 1/8 Cherokee, I never thought to write a letter on behalf of the Native Americans in this country. I have been to their reservations. I have seen the abject poverty they live in. But in my mind, somewhere deep down inside, it's, oh, that's them. It's not me. I've seen the struggles of women and not written a letter in support of them. Oh, that's them, not me. I know that there are little blue-eyed, blonde-haired children in the Appalachian Mountains right now who are starving, whose fathers have died in the coal mines from black lung disease. And I've read stories and seen articles where some of them are literally starving and kids are shooting possums and muskrats to eat. I never sent any contribution. That's them. Then I asked myself, forget about the contributions. Did you ever sit and concentrate a prayer in their behalf? I watched the whole thing going on with the American, with the natives, the first peoples, and I saw thousands of people who had gathered in support. And I noticed that I wasn't one of them. And I started counting African Americans. And I saw so few, even though so many African Americans carry the blood of First Peoples and Native Americans in them. But you know what? We're trying to deal with our own self-interest group. So what I'm making it my business for this year is to keep expanding and expanding and expanding my self-interest group until my self-interest group includes all of humanity, every color, every class, every religion, every race, every lifestyle. Then I can relax, and only then. A call to rise is living in each and every one of you. I give you a homework assignment for this particular week to self-examine, to ask yourself what is your call to rise and how you can get excited about what upsets you. The Chinese coin, the same symbol, but different interpretations. One interpretation of the symbol, danger. That's the one that enters our minds first. The ego is first to speak and speaks the loudest. It always says, there is a lot to be afraid of. But if we are quiet enough, the Holy Spirit's voice will intervene and will remind us gently, there is nothing to fear but fear itself. Danger or opportunity? You get to choose how you interpret the symbol. God is in heaven. Heaven is in you. And holy is your name. God wants you to know you have nothing to fear and that there is nothing and no one to blame. You've been informed. Your captivity is over. You've been informed. In truth, you're free. And so it is. Peace! Hallelujah!
We are so blessed. As we move into our time of meditation this morning, I invite you to settle back into your chair, And move your focus away from listening in the outer and tune in with clarity and purpose to your heart space, to center on spirit within. This morning, I invite you to focus on our divine power of strength. Charles Fillmore tells us strength is our ability to endure, to stay the course, and persevere in all that is ours to do. Our strength comes from the energy of God, giving us stability of character and the power to withstand the distractions and temptations of the world, to know the truth and stand firm arm in arm with our power of faith. Spirit within helps us recognize and appreciate strength in all areas of our lives. We embrace the strength of our bodies as we see them whole, well, and strong. We affirm abundant physical health, knowing it for our hearts and lungs and every organ in our bodies, and envisioning the ever-renewing and unlimited strength that is always available to us. We use discernment in caring for our bodies with rest and rejuvenation. And we honor this amazing vehicle that houses our spirit and empowers us to be the hands and feet and voices of God on earth. We are the physical strength of God in action. We recognize the strength of our minds and hearts as we prayerfully are guided by spirit to make good decisions and remain calm and sure and poised in the face of dissent and controversy. We appreciate the strength of our convictions in our daily choices to see the world rightly and know the right next steps to take with integrity and purpose. With strength, we affirm with confidence every day, with God, all things are possible. And with that prayer, we know what to do and how to do it for the highest and best for everyone in our world. We embrace the spiritual courage and confidence we possess in our deep knowing that there is no place where God is not. No darkness that cannot be penetrated by the light and love of God. No confusion that cannot be untangled through the strength of Spirit. And as we move into our time of silence, we feel the strength of God moving through us, sweeping away any sense of doubt or weakness, and bringing healing to mind, body, and spirit. Breathe in the strength that sustains you. Today, I claim my power of strength, and so it is. Amen.